Welcome to Founders Focus, a podcast made for founders by founders. I'm Scott Case, CEO and co-founder of Upside, and I created Founders Focus to help share free resources and actionable advice. Together, we're building a community for business leaders, entrepreneurs, and founders to come together to tackle today's challenges. This podcast is powered by my awesome team at Upside. Please visit foundersfocus.com to join the live video sessions or to catch up on past topics. Joined by Michael Dauphne, who is the CEO and principal consultant at the Dauphne Group. And today we're going to talk about a lot of different things, but we're going to center a lot of it around trust, compassion, stability, and hope. And we all use them our hope, so maybe we'll emphasize that one. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Michael to introduce himself, and then we'll get everything started. So Michael, welcome.
Thank you, Scott. Hey, great to be here. Hey, guys. Yeah, my name is Michael Dauphne. I am an executive performance consultant. Basically, what that means is that I try to focus on extracting every ounce of potential with regards to clients and teams. And mostly that also means helping them get out of their own way. And so I do that with assessments, consulting, coaching. And clients are pretty broad. I have a pretty, Scott, we always talk about this. I have a very broad portfolio of clients, be it companies like Upside, but also things like professional sports teams or the small manufacturing company in Michigan, with a little bit of international development work chucked in. Since pandemic times, obviously my client list has changed, but right now mostly my focus is I'm on a police reform project for the UN in Somalia. So we're trying to wrangle four different providers to bring security and justice reform to Southern Somalia. And we're doing a lot of work with the US Olympic Committee, who is suddenly kind of trying to figure out how to navigate between now and 21 and what will be China in 22 for the Winter Olympics. So yeah, that's kind of me, performance consultant. That's what I do. So thanks for having me on, Scott.
Thanks, Michael. And as Michael mentioned, we've worked together over the last few years at Upside across our entire team, both with leadership and with individuals. And a lot of the work has been around using StrengthsFinder as a tool. And we may have some time to get into that. But before we do, you've touched on it a little, but we used to play a game called Where is Michael? We'd have calls scheduled and they would be at all kinds of times of day. And we would say, Michael, where are you? And it'd be like, oh, I'm in Dubai, or I'm in Minneapolis, or I'm in wherever. You traveled prolifically before this. So talk a little bit about kind of what that travel was like. You've touched on it a little bit. And then how did your business just changed dramatically at the beginning of the pandemic, and then how did you pivot through it? Because ultimately you're an entrepreneur. I mean, you didn't say it that way, but at the end of the day, that your business is you pay your own bills. So
exactly.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm like anyone else here. You know, if you're a founder, you understand this piece. Yeah, I mean, I remember I was meeting with a team in Dallas and on March 14th. And they were like, are we sure we want to do the meeting? One of the attendees of this room of 10 has been in Italy in the last week. And so that was the first moment when I realized this was about to change, truly, is that people were starting to cancel meetings. And I was on a plane to LA and at the airport, but the night they went to shelter in place, I ended up coming home. So for me, immediately, one, my travel stopped like everyone else. But also, as an independent consultant, kind of a boutique specialist in this little performance area, like my entire business model went away. Because I would typically come into a client, much like someone Upside, do a workshop, and out of that would do long-term coaching, consulting, and planning. Well, being in town for travel is a major part of business development. Being in town, I can be like, hey, Scott, I'm in town for Tetra Tech. Hey, can we meet up? And suddenly my conversation with Scott or Kristen leads to something else. So for me, the pandemic not only has changed how I live my life, but the business development model of how I gain clients, how I get access to clients. Also, the thing I deliver, the product is dramatically different. You know, no one's going to buy an 8-hour Zoom call anymore where I used to do 8-hour workshops or deep dives with teams. And so the product changes, the biz dev is changing, and even how you relate to your clients has shifted. So, yeah, I think I lost probably, nearly $100,000 in a day. And I remember that first time for an independent consultant going, what is that like? And so you pivot and you shift and you go, how do I find a new way to serve with new products and kind of meet there? So it's been a big shift, not just with the travel, but how business impacts me in general.
So talk a little bit about how you've adjusted your product. So as you said, you typically would come into something like Upside. We had a few pre-calls. There were our company's about 100 people. You'd come in and talk about things. We'd then meet with individual teams. That's all gone. So what are you doing now? How are you engaging with your clients when you can't be there?
Right. What we're realizing too is that Zoom is, people are like, we went to Zoom right away. We're obviously doing this on Zoom, but it's this idea of that if you're going to get content, well, it used to be in a group session and now has to be in bite-sized packets. Individuals need 6 to 13 minute video pieces that also have PDFs to go with it. The long form, stand in a room, have a big experience is done. So to provide a product, I'm having to shift to, like right now we're in the middle of production on new video series that then adds on to coaching or consulting, building more platform to deliver different products and services via customized video responses to things. And so the live is having to be merged as a secondary kind of add-on with packaged content. And so for me, that's a big shift because it's a dramatically different approach. And so hoping that again, continues the business development, that still provides the opportunity to the consulting and coaching that I love to do.
So you've been at this shift for 4 or 5 months now.
Yep.
You've had a bunch of clients, some of them your existing clients, some you've taken as new. What do you think you're all about human people performance, right? So from a people performance standpoint, what do you think the big challenges companies are facing? You met with a bunch of them, you had, and maybe you could contrast it. What were the big issues, you know, last fall, and what are the things they're facing now in the summertime?
Yeah. I mean, before pre-pandemic, it was, how do we keep this growth going? How do we onboard? How do we hire? How do we expand? Because everything was burning hot and heavy. And then suddenly post-pandemic, obviously there's restraints and concerns and fears, but here's the big piece for me. I feel like companies are wrestling with the reality that suddenly their employees' personal life has crashed into their business. Meaning moving the employee home, their personal setting and their personal lives are now part of their challenge. We talked about StrengthsFinder, which is created by Gallup. So Clifton Strengths is the new name of it, I guess. One of the research products they did years ago called Q12 was about employee engagement and there's 12 questions. But one of the key elements they found that measures how engaged employees are is, do they have a best friend at work? Gallup found that companies really bristled at this idea of being involved in the relational friendships of their staff. And so this thought of being too personal, getting too much personal, has always been a challenge for companies. Suddenly, the personal life of employees is straight up in their business because it's impacting all how that works. And so managers are struggling to understand what can I ask for? What can I not ask? Do I pretend there's been no change and I still demand? Do I care whether or not the kids are in the video frames during conference calls and meetings? The personal life of the employee crashing into the business world, I think, is a big shift for team leaders.
So how are you advising companies to tackle that? And look, I face it. We're a pretty relaxed company. We're very much about, you know, family first, even before the pandemic. So if you need to take time off or you need to do what you got to do to make sure that your family's in a good place so you can show up as your best self at work. Now those things have crashed into each other. And, you know, I'm on video calls all the time with people who are, their desk is in their bedroom and their, you know, their kids are running around or they're outside because that's the only place to keep everybody from like killing each other. So tell me a little bit about how companies are coping with that. What are they doing what changes are they making or what are you advising them to do?
Yeah, and I think that's actually kind of where we got to today on this beat is, Gallup did a survey for a book they called Strengths-Based Leadership, which was the thing of what does every follower want from every leader? A lot of the research had been in studying high performers to see what made high performers exceptional. And they realized they hadn't actually studied followers. And so they took 20,000 people who identified themselves as individual contributors and said, what do you actually want? What do the best of the best leaders contribute to their life? And this four beats, which is in the book, again, Strengths-Based Leadership, ends up being the thing that even right now, it still works in kind of engaging clients. For if you're a manager and you have employees, this is what they want from you. They want trust, compassion, stability, and hope. And that's the start of the conversation, that these are the four elements that if you would just start to ping this with your direct reports or with your staff, it begins to open up the conversation so they can actually tell you what they need. Because that's the pieces that don't read their minds, ask the employee, what do you need? And it starts with trust, compassion, stability, and hope.
So just unpack those a little bit. When you say trust, there's degrees of trust, right? There's degrees of being compassionate. There's degrees of levels of stability. We're all feeling unstable now. We're hopeful for the future, but boy, the evidence continues to build on a day-to-day basis that the future, the good future, doesn't appear to be coming around the corner anytime soon. So talk a little bit about what those mean, each of those pieces mean, and then how do you kind of deliver against them?
Yeah, and so this idea of trust is this idea of showing the employee wants to know that, one, that they can trust you. And so you're trying to express the fact that you are trustworthy to them. They need to know that you are who they say they are. And so part of that, the big unpacking of that, especially I'm going to frame this within COVID right now, is to express trust to your employee, share the good news and the bad. If they wonder if you're holding back, that's going to be a real challenge. Communicate the steps you're taking with regards to their safety. Communicate the actions you're taking in those moments. Talking a lot about, hey, here's how our core values were before COVID. Here's how our core values are going to play out post-COVID. And at the same time, keep your regular human contact. It lets them know I still matter. And so you are trustworthy to your team and kind of your employees. When it comes to compassion, it's this idea of basically, and this is the soundbite that I love, is that we are all in the same storm, but not in the same boat. Like, we're just not. And so how do you understand that while your situation is struggling, so is theirs? And so how do we kind of meet them? So we've got to respect the fact, compassion, to express that everyone's on a different place. They're a different part of the spectrum, especially with Clifton Strengths themes. You may find that this uncertainty does well with you, but you're not sure about how to leverage it moving forward because your brain works different. Well, it's the same thing with your team. Also, you need to be a really great listener. You need to be able to listen and ask questions without feeling the pressure of, I must have all the answers. The fact that you're willing to say, how are you, is kind of a big deal. And then stability, when it comes to the stability factor, this is the part that you're not losing it every time a new piece of news comes out, every time the market does something or someone of power tweets or whatever, you are stable. And so the key to showing stability is, how do you highlight, look, this is what was true before the pandemic, this is what is true after the pandemic. This is the beat. And so the three pieces, that this idea of, here's what's going to stay the same. You know, here's also what we're going to focus on with regards to our processes. And then ultimately it's this complementary partnership of, we still have each other. And so we're building relationships. Relationships end up being a stabilizing factor, kind of encouraging that with your staff. And then the last one is hope. And this is kind of the vision potential of this, but in a pandemic, like, well, how do you engage in hope? What does this mean? If your hope is in the external environment for your team, that's a challenge because the external environment is uncertain. Part of this conversation I'm coaching leaders into is your hope is in your clarity of what it is you do well, and your people is the resilience. Your stability is internal. So our hope is, hey, we have a good team. We know we have a good product. How do we keep focusing in on that? Also, when it comes to hope, you got to celebrate every win. You got to over kind of amp up the celebration. Look what we achieved. Look, everything is more focused on celebration because you're going, there's optimism and there's a reason to. So trust, compassion, stability, and hope, those little practices can really get your employee to open up and go, they're in this with me and I can trust them.
I think one of the things, and it took us a while to figure out though, the celebrate even the smallest wins. You know, we do an all upside meeting every morning at 8:45, and we post into our Slack channel kind of a summary of what we're going to talk about. And it's usually 5-minute meeting. And we added about 6 or 8 weeks ago a little wins icon, and it's big things. Hey, we landed a giant new customer, and it's small things like we hired somebody. Those are all important. So that hope part of, hey, there's momentum is really key. Yeah. But there's also a tension on the stability side and building trust, right? That authenticity of, you know what, I'm having a shitty day and things did not go the way I wanted them to, which is being trust. Hey, look, I have my, and then the other side of it, which is, but we got this. And there's like this tension there. How do you resolve, or how do you advise resolving that? I'm asking for a friend, by the way. It's not something
not
that
I. Not for you, not clearly.
No, I've got this under control.
Totally. You know, for someone else who might be struggling with that, it's this idea of going, I don't have to have the answer. And so the answer can be, we're working on an answer. It's the challenge of the leader who gets cornered in a moment, right? Where someone's heard something and the rumor mill and there's passing words and you're like, okay, what about this? It's the thing of going, I'm present with you. I don't yet have the answer. I'm still working on it. Things aren't perfect, but it will be okay, right? The story's not done. And so being authentic and present, yeah, today's a crappy day, but it's not going to destroy my world. You can express authenticity about reality without implying what today means for tomorrow. And so a key phrase I'm saying that I'm getting clients to say a lot, I'm like, tell your team the word yet. Yet is the key word. Because if you keep your self-talk and your framing in the past and you drag it into the present, it becomes your future. So we haven't figured this out yet. We've never done this before, but we can. We're going to. It's all about the yet concept. Because like for me, when I shifted, I remember telling someone, oh my gosh, I'm in trouble. All my biz dev is in person. I've never gotten someone through an electronic referral to have an electronic cup of coffee. So therefore I say, well, I can't get anyone through, like, I can't do biz dev that way. I can't. I have to say to myself with my own coach, I haven't yet figured out how to do biz dev through Zoom. I haven't yet figured out how to transform my 7-hour course into a package that people want to sell. I haven't yet figured out, because that's reality, but it's still vision and hope.
Yeah, yet is, it can be my new favorite word. It really is really powerful. And it's interesting looking back on the last 4 or 5 months. I think a lot of businesses were in a place, in the ones that got, bam, they just got clobbered. Your business, travel was that way, restaurants. And we're now looking back at it and saying, wow, a lot of our own company, your business, a lot of other businesses have figured it out. It's been hard, it's been challenging, et cetera, but you know, we've sort of puzzled through. And so not only is it yet in that it's future, but we've got some evidence in behind us in the rearview mirror now that suggests that the yets of 2 months ago have been delivered, even if it was hard or difficult. It's a powerful thought. So I want to talk, I'm going to see if you can chat a little bit about one of your more well-known clients. You brought it up earlier. You've got the Olympic Committee, and I can only imagine what it would be like as an athlete who thought that this was their moment to shine. I'm going to Japan. I'm going to compete for the gold for my, in this case, the U.S., but really any Olympic team. And then, we might not do it. We're definitely not doing it. Maybe next year. So
we're hoping.
Who have you been working with, and how have you helped at that level?
Yeah, so I do coaching for individual teams, like USA Triathlon specifically. They have a podium project that's focused in on some very elite athletes there, but also I work with the high performance coaching. And we actually had pre-scheduled a How Do You Strengths Finder as a coach to communicate, collaborate, and prioritize with your athletes. So what is your Strengths Finder profile bias you towards that you need to correct for when coaching down? But what was interesting is we ended up doing that the day after the announcement of the delay. So suddenly all of our follow-ups ended up being on how do we do more with less, because the budgets are in cycles. The investment of budgets in athletes is on cycles. Where we're supposed to peak this year, now it has to stretch. You have athletes who are planning on going into the medical field after the Olympics, and suddenly they're do I delay, do I not? And so one, it's a matter of trying to get coaches right now, we're offering a lot of support of how do you find ways, even some of them are having to get new part-time jobs to pay themselves because their sport, like think about all the sports that are performance-based, snowboarding, triathlon, all these different things, their budgets were based on races and competitions. That's right. All gone. And so they're having to now do more with less. And so it's more about helping coaches understand based on their profile, how do they stretch their budgets? How do they multitask and apply their strengths to new roles than they thought, as well as going, athletes are now worried about their own support. How do they leverage their strengths with regards to kind of keeping going? And so there's a number of teams that are in this position, and we're trying to, and so in fact, all of you know, plug, there's a foundation right now. If you want to support an Olympic athlete, there are athletes right now who are working 2 and 3 jobs to still be afforded train. And so we're trying to get the word out to support these athletes individually and say their dreams are delayed a year. Can we support them? And so there's the U.S. Olympic Athlete Foundation, the USOC is kind of doing that. So focused in on trying to help coaches do more with less over the next 12 months.
So we had a question come through that I think is, it's, you've just talked about teams, even if it's an individual sport, like a triathlete where you're on your own, but yet you're on a team we have a lot of solopreneurs, people on this Zoom or will watch this video who are maybe quite literally by themselves, like quarantined at home, trying to grind out their day. And I know, I don't know what your situation is, but you're a solopreneur in a lot of ways. You don't have a giant team that supports you. Yeah. So how do you sort of self-coach? You talked about, you know, the core of trust and compassion and stability and hope, but when you're both the manager and the employee,
right?
Like, what are the elements? What are the tips and tricks?
I hope. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Part of the, you know, I have the Dauphiny group, just so you know, the Dauphiny group many times is simply the voices in my head. I admit that. That's the Dauphiny group ultimately. My name is Legion. Oh wait, no. So or Sybil, right? Here's the way some of this works ultimately is this idea of embrace the pandemic to give you permission. Embrace the pandemic to give you permission to do it different. Because as a solopreneur, I used to think that to sign up for a group or to ask someone else for help was a sign of weakness. I'm gonna get my lunch eaten. I can't let anybody know that it's a struggle. If we had said that Ralph Lauren was gonna start making personal protective equipment 6 months ago, you would have laughed, actually 10 months ago. But suddenly, pandemic gives Ralph Lauren permission to announce that as support, they're gonna start making equipment. We don't go, who is he to think he could do that? See, the pandemic is giving us permission to peel away preconceived notions. So use, as a founder, use this moment to go, everything I think is a sign of weakness is no longer weakness. I'm going to join Founders Focus and never miss. I am going to find a virtual networking group to be a part of and not miss. I'm gonna hire a coach or a therapist to have somebody other than the voices in my head coach me. Those are some of the most key elements that, for me, I think during this window, don't cut back, invest. And so your well-being, your product will never be healthier than you are. If you're a solopreneur, there is no product that'll be healthier than you are. And so there's five areas of well-being that you need a dashboard for yourself. How are you feeling about your work, career? How are you feeling about your money? How are you feeling about the love in your life? How are you feeling about your health? How are you feeling about your home? Your career, your money, your love, your health, your home. Where are these five beats? It doesn't need to be perfect, but if you don't know where you're at on those areas, you can't maintain what needs to be impacted, so therefore I can actually be healthy.
Yeah, we've talked quite a bit, and I'll just remind everybody. And since we're not traveling, I have to remind you, put the mask on yourself first.
Yes.
Then put it on other people. And I think that getting in a good place yourself and that self-care, whatever that means for you, and you've given those great five dimensions, you know, checking in on them and making sure they're in a place. I have my own version of it, which I think is on, so I don't know when this was, maybe 3 or 4 months ago. I draw a little circular diagram that has me in the middle. Very, very egotistical on my part. But then it's got my spouse and my children and the rest of my family. And when I've been in my worst spots, I've sort of checked this diagram and said, am I okay here? Yeah, everybody's good on that one. Okay, now I can deal with it. So just making sure that you're sort of taking care of that. And then the other thing I'd suggest is, especially with this group, we've got, you know, 500 something other people, many of whom are in the same boat as you. So if you're feeling like you want somebody, I don't doubt that getting 15 or 20 minutes or half an hour with somebody that's in Founders Focus to just talk to once a week and just be able to express to another founder or somebody else facing the same kinds of things. Sometimes we just need people to talk to so we can unload this stuff. It's incredibly lonely. Yeah. So let's talk about fear. So we had a question about fear, how to manage it. How do you become fearless? How do you acknowledge it? But talk about fear.
Yeah, so when it comes to fear, what I've realized is through my own coaching and my own work is this realization that I am addicted to predictability. And my addiction to being able to predict the future, even a crappy future, is what the source of my fear is. Is that I will think, even if it's going to be bad, if I can, and so I will hunt up every scenario I've ever embraced in order to go, what do I think is coming next? In a pandemic, no past scenario works. Okay? So all you can do is start with honesty of, I don't know. I don't know where I am. I don't know where, because fear is the belief in an impending harm that has not yet occurred. And so what ends up happening when it comes to being afraid is that we believe something And then we decide what we think is true about that thing we're afraid of. And then we act. We either act to confront the fear or we act to react to the fear. But most people will focus in on trying to pretend they're not afraid, when instead you need to focus in on truth. When it comes to fear, the key to managing fear is focusing in on what is actually true. So you're afraid of something, whatever it could be, a loss of market, a loss of client, revenue, making payroll, whatever those pieces are. What you've then got to focus in on, what is everything I know? And write it down, like be specific. What is really true? What are options I haven't thought of? Who could I talk to? What are the relationships? What are the pieces? And you make that real and then look at the truth and say, is this something that I need to be emotionally afraid of? Or can I take a different truth and go, you know what? There's actually more here than I thought. I don't have to emotionally react. Instead of focusing on fear, get hardcore focused on reality and truth, like honesty with yourself. Wait a minute. That's my emotional reaction that my past is going to become my future. The past doesn't matter. This is a pandemic. I haven't yet figured out how to navigate this. Yet could be the answer to your fear. Start embracing the word yet. Look at your resources. And then you embrace permission to ask for help. Just ask for help. You can do this.
I think I want you to repeat your definition of fear again, because it's something that everybody should be reminded.
Yeah. Fear is the belief of impending doom or harm based on an event that has not yet occurred. And so instead of confronting that, focus in on the truth, because when you act in response to fear, it is always based on what you believe to be true. So your focus shouldn't be your fear. Your focus should be in the truth. Catalog it, make it your warrior, make it your kind of your tools, and start from there.
Yeah, it's really powerful. The writing things down, it sounds so simple. And yet so many people, not just founders, but just individual humans making their way through the world, just there's something cathartic about writing down everything that you might be either afraid of or you're worried about or concerned or anxious about. And, you know, it very rarely does it fit the, you know, a 50 page volume, right? It almost always can fit in a single sheet of paper, yep. In which case your entire universe of stuff fits in one place.
Yeah. And I tell people all the time, your head is a horrible place to store your hope. Your head is a horrible place to store your hope. Write that thing down. Be clear. Be like, it's clear. And not like, and visualization is important and all those other elements are key, but I'm talking about get specific. Like, deal with the realities, like hard realities. Your hope is a horrible place. Your head is a horrible place to store your hope.
So you brought this up in your own experience. I want to come back to it, which is around, there's this sense of being compassionate and vulnerable. And at the same time, how do you avoid, or how do you think about maybe coming across as weak, right? And I hear from people, I don't want to demonstrate any weakness. You know, even saying things like, I don't know, it's like, well, you should know, or how come you don't, or how does as a leader, do you sort of like get over it, right? Like what are the things that allow you to get to a place where you can be comfortable being vulnerable as an individual, being compassionate for someone else, and at the same time, not demonstrating that, like, oh, you're just kind of letting everything go.
Yeah, it's the power, I think, of shifting the focus out. It's a really impossible to be compassionate when you're focused on it. It's impossible to be afraid or fear of weakness when you're focused on others. Because when I'm worried about how I come across, is actually about you. Like, you're worried about you and how you're going to come across. When you actually make others the focus, it ends up shifting the conversation completely. When I'm coaching executives a lot of times who are in transition, who are hunting for jobs, and they're like, well, how do I come across? And what do I do? And they're all worried about how to make the right impression. And I'll say to them, I want you to walk in that interview telling yourself, I'm about to be that interviewer's best moment of their day. Focus on them. Be completely present out and watch your confidence change. And so compassion is not about weakness, but going, wow, I can be present because I'm externally focused. It takes the focus off your anxiety, your fraud syndrome, your insufficiency, and pivot out. And so I can be present in some ways. It's a different approach. Focus out will change the conversation of what's the fear within.
So when you think about this new normal around human interactions, right? Here we are. We're a collection of people on a flat piece of glass looking at each other in these rectangles. And you mentioned it on your own about saying, look, you're a lot of your business development or relationship development is in person, being there, being present. And how has that changed, and how do we as individuals adapt to that new reality that this is going to be this way for a while and we've got to find a new way? How have you adapted, and what recommendations do you have?
Yeah, I think there's this element of, so for me, I believe that it starts with keep the human in the center. Like, am I authentically trying to follow the relationships with my clients, with each other? There's a lot of, and so authenticity about stumbling, it not being easy or comfortable, keep the human at the center, I think is the first piece. The second piece is try stuff out, prototype it, try it. It's funny, I realize now I have actual relationships and people I've met, for lack of a better word, in the real world that I met through Instagram DMs or LinkedIn messages. There was a day when that would be unheard of. Ultimately, that you would use technology in that way. We will eventually get there. We're gonna go there. Keep the human in the center, test drive technology, embrace the fact nobody's gonna do this perfect. How do I keep showing up? And then listen to people. What was good for you? What worked for you? What do you need? I don't have to give, I have to be present so you can ask, so I could potentially give. Keep the person in the center, test drive a lot of stuff, and I really think focus in on ask the question, what do you need?
So from a what do you need standpoint, you know, that's in a lot of ways, that's just great salespersonship, right? Understanding where somebody else is at. So when you've been introduced to an executive and you are, for lack of a better word, trying to sell them that you're the right partner for them.
Yeah.
What's your strategy? What do you typically look for? And how does that, when it goes well, how does it go? And when it doesn't work, how does it go?
Yeah. Typically it's the question of, tell me about what's beyond high performance. Because I'm not called into teams usually. My spot is not Mr. Fix-It. I'm not a repair guy. I'm usually coming into high performing teams. I'm like, what is beyond high performance? What, high performing? That's the first question. And if they can answer it, I want to understand it. But here's the question I'm hoping to respond with. The question beyond what's beyond high performance is best answered with, what are we capable of? Because that's a question you can chase forever. What am I capable of? Did I ring out all my capability and potential? Because if that's the thing, I want to know that. Do they have a vision for, I want to reach beyond high performance to capability? And that question alone has transformed teams, but also like interesting things like small. I had a client, I said this to a group of orthodontists once, and suddenly they reframed what it meant to be an impact in their community. Because we are not just a business. What are we capable of? Is the question beyond high performance. And here's the second question. Do you know where you're getting in your own way? I don't need you to have the answer. I need you to be aware of what are your steps and behaviors that are self-sabotaging you. Because if we can change the narrative of what you think tomorrow means for, and yesterday means for you tomorrow, we can reshape the trajectory of your life using, again, tools, coaching, consulting. What are we capable of? Where are you getting in your own way? And what are you willing to pay for that? Like, what would you give to get out of your own way and discover what you're capable of? And those are kind of the three beats for me.
That's awesome. I have a hunk of metal in my office that has the world's most annoying question on it. And I'm reading it, and it says, what would you attempt to do if you knew you could not fail? Which is a riff on what are you capable of, right? Yep. And the reason it's so annoying is it's like, well, shit, if I knew I couldn't fail, then I would like, I'd get out of this and I'd get off this planet and I'd do all kinds of other stuff. But if there's something about that notion of challenging yourself on what you're capable of, that's incredibly powerful.
Yep.
So you talked about wondering about asking for help for yourself. We have a few folks who've asked the question of, all right, I'm an entrepreneur. How do I go about asking for help? And is there a way to do it that you found to be more successful in engaging others to participate in supporting you and getting you where you want to go?
I think, so there's when people say, oh, I'm struggling to find help, I will be like, tell me in hard reality what it is you're trying. Who have you told in your life, I need help? Like, I want to know the exact person. When did you say it? How many times did you ask for help? We forget that people want to help us, but they don't want to offend us. So we want, so my clients, I'd be like, okay, did you send the emails? Who have you emailed to and said, I need help? So one, I start with the individual, then I ask the next question. What resources do you have? Are you going to Founders Focus? What LinkedIn groups are you in? Like, and so if that's the level you need to go to, but I get very specific on reality because a lot of us talk about it. My coach, one of the best things he ever says to me is, Mike, know yourself by your actions, not how you think about yourself. If Scott could only know me, and so my actions need to be, did I send the email? Did I Google and join that group? Did I sign up for Talkspace therapy online if I don't have a local therapist? How would I know you today as a founder with your actions? Because take action that asks and invites the world to help you. You will be shocked to find there's a world waiting. And here's the last thing. If you do get a one-on-one, here's the magic phrase. Don't just say, well, yeah, so here's my need, Scott. And by the way, you know, if you think of anybody that can help me, let me know. No, I'm going to say to Scott, hey, Scott, so here's my need. I'm trying to give virtual introductions. Scott, here's the magic phrase. If you were in my place, who would you reach out to next week? And then stop talking. And Scott's going to like say something or not. And he's like, well, I don't know. Well, Scott, if I emailed you in 48 hours, could you think you could make an introduction, come up with two names? Scott's going to want to help me. He's going to want to. He's going to give me a name. There's a Harvard study that talks about when it comes to business, you are more likely to get a job referral from a friend of a friend than you are from your friend. Because the friend of the friend is doing two people a favor. Reach out to Scott, for example, ask him, tell him what you need, and then say, if you were in my position, who would you reach out to? And then wait, you'll be shocked. I always tell, when it's job hunting from that same kind of a model, I'm like, if you get six cups of coffee in without finding your next opportunity, I'll eat my shoe. If you do the work.
So, we've got maybe 3 minutes left and we've got two questions. So you're going to have to do speed round on this.
All right.
Is it too early to start planning for the post-pandemic time? Is there anything about what we've learned that you think is going to carry forward? And have you started to think that way, or is it just too early?
You know, I heard a great thought yesterday from a researcher who was like, we need to think about the pandemic in the future as hurricane season. Think about hurricane season. If you live in a hurricane zone, you know things pop up and you're prepared and you're ready and think through it, it's going to come again. And so you need to not go, oh, we're post-pandemic. No, this is likely over the next 24 months or longer going to be something that has flares and ebbs and flows. So what is your stability like right now? And what does your emergency response look like?
Okay. And then the last one, and then we have a few that we'll follow up with, is what do you love best about being in service to your clients? What's the thing that gets you jazzed?
Being a part of their story transforms the story I'm living. Like to be a footnote, to be mentioned in the story of so many other people is an amazing gift. And I'm like, man, to be invited in, to walk through for a season, a window, a day, a month, being part of their story that has ripples, that's what moves me.
Got it. Awesome. Very, very good. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Founders Focus. What did you think? You got any feedback for us? Got a topic that you'd like us to discuss? Or maybe a future co-host? We'd love to hear from you. Just hit me up on LinkedIn at tscottcase and join us at foundersfocus.com to stay up to date with the latest episodes, and join us live every week at our Founders Focus sessions. Hope to see you there.